This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 363 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Elizabeth S. And we still have some spots on our Podbrod 2021 tour. That's next September. And to find out more about the trip and the itinerary and everything possible, visit podabroad.com. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide, and you can access your account anytime, anywhere, and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Visit betterhelp.com/outlander. That's better, H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And as a special offer for Outlander podcast listeners, get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/outlander.
And now on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along, beginning with chapter 31, entitled, And So to Bed.
To bed to sleep?
Yeah, that's what I thought of too. So by the time it was dark, Claire was beginning to feel edgy. She was still alone. She was starting at small sounds and she was a little bit nervous.
I mean, why shouldn't she? Because when she put her guard down, Tom Christie showed up and scared the crap out of her.
Yes. So she looks at the
That would have put me on edge, too.
She looks at the place where Jamie kept the pistols. Most of them were gone, but one was left. And one's all she needs, even though we find out it wasn't a gun that shot very well. But she took it and prepped it. And when the back door finally opened, she was sitting with a copy of Don Quixote and pointing a pistol at the door and almost shot Ian. Ian says they were done for the day, and meaning done with Brown, done with questioning him, and that Brown had peed himself when Jamie took the dirt out of his belt to clean his nails. But they hadn't touched him. Then Jamie comes in telling her that men are washing the house and that they're safe. And then he looks at her book. And realizes, it was in Spanish, which she didn't speak. So she's been muddling her
but
way through.
But she said
through.
It was close enough, close and enough she to knew French. The story.
Yeah, that's true. Close enough to French. Well, that's like me, kind of, because I don't know how close English and Dutch or German and Dutch are in comparison to Spanish and French. So I don't know how close they are compared to those two, but I can promise you I would not be able to read Dutch.
But what about
Deutsch and Switzerdeutsch.
Interesting. If I had a novel, right? Not an audio recording, and a written novel. If I had a book written in the, transcribed Schweizerdeutsch. And there's not just one Schweizerdeutsch. It's regional and by area. So there's more than one Schweizerdeutsch. But let's say there was one Schweizerdeutsch, which, by the way, if you don't understand that, it's Swiss German. If there were one Schweizerdeutsch and you gave me a novel in Schweizerdeutsch, yeah, I think I'd be able, I would knock out every single word, but I think I'd be able to make it out. And the reason is, this is just a ginger thing, is that I have noticed that if you try and read Schweizerdeutsch, even with the background in German, it can almost be terrifying because you're like, what? So many, like you thought German had a lot of consonants. Oh Lord, the Swiss German has like a lot, is scary. It's scary coming not from an English speaker, but from someone who learned German. Anyway, so what I would have to do with Schweizerdeutsch is I would have to read it I would have to try and pronounce it. It's in the pronunciation that I hear, oh, okay, they're trying to say this. Or it's they're speaking or writing Schweizerdeutsch, but the Schweizerdeutsch is related to the Hochdeutsch in this way. So when I see Schweizerdeutsch typed out, and I have a few friends on Facebook who speak Swiss German, and if I follow any media, I don't get 100% of it. I probably get 70%, maybe 80% if I'm listening to it. Definitely get the gist of what they're talking about. But if it's written, I have to sound it out. Not because that means I understand it, but because when I sound it out, I hear it. And when I hear it, I can make connection to a German word that might sound similar. So I would have a lot better idea, I think, listening to Schweizerdeutsch than reading Schweizerdeutsch, and thus to be able to try and even understand the written, unless it's like one or two words, to be able to understand a conversation or a book or a description of anything in Schweizerdeutsch, I would have to sound it out because it's in the hearing of it that I can make the phonetic connections with Hochdeutsch. Yes. That's a lot of words.
I feel like, I know, I feel like this is the equivalent, Claire's reading a Spanish Don Quixote is the equivalent of a toddler who can't read yet, being able to read you a book based on the fact that you've read it to them 300 million times at bedtime.
Oh, that's funny.
And they recognize what words come with the pictures. So she's familiar with the story enough.
Yeah.
And there are words that are close enough that she literally just needed something to stare at.
Like, oh, on this page, this is where that dude dies. Or this is where that dude.
Exactly.
That dude sleeps with that girl. Yeah. The main point. I don't think that's wrong. So as I said, Jamie comes in telling her that men are watching the house. They are safe, safe as you can be. She's reading a book in Spanish, which she didn't speak. Jamie and Ian go to find food. Of course. They give her some toast. Buttered toast. And man, Diana's writing made that toast sound really good, actually. So Lionel,
you know, what is it about? What is it about our favorite authors having obsessions with toast?
Oh, that's funny.
Deborah Harkness does the same thing.
With Diana, I
makes
know.
Makes me want to eat toast all hours of the day.
Yes, that is her. Tea and toast now, is her favorite.
After this,
snack.
I was like, oh, but this wasn't just toast, man. This was fresh. You knew this was like fresh baked bread toast. Like this was what was left over from the most recent loaf. Toasting it on forks. But I'm just sitting here thinking, I'm like, I'm at least 3 hours away from fresh bread at any point in time. And sometimes that seems like it's worth it and sometimes it doesn't. But I guarantee you, I don't generally go to my loaf bread that I bought at the grocery store and just want to put that in the toaster and eat it. I don't like that kind of toast. But if it was fresh bread, that would be a whole different story.
Yeah, I'm not that particular when it comes to toast. I'll take, as long as it's not moldy, I'll have it. I don't care if it's store-bought bread. But yeah, I think fresh bread is just ridiculous. It's so good. It's so good. So in their questioning of Lionel Brown, he had, of course, put everything on hodgepile. So what had happened was, according to Lionel, this is a long one. I mean, the chapter's not that long, so it will not be that long, but it's a lot of stuff. Richard and Lionel, as we know, had established the Committee of Safety. Remember the one that they had ridden into town and asked Jamie to be part of? So Jamie had said, thank you, no. Jamie just wanted nothing but peace, right? He wanted to live there in peace with his family. He did not want to become an Indian agent. Part of, or the biggest reason Jamie did become an Indian agent was he knew if he didn't, one of the Browns would, and that would basically solidify their power in the region and could, more so than just having a committee of safety run by the Browns, be even potentially more dangerous against them, the Frasers of on the Ridge. Lionel insisted this had been for the public good. They did this committee of safety to try and help keep people safe. Most of the males in Brownsville had joined them. Now, they dealt with small matters, small upsets, small fights, that kind of thing. And Ian says, quote, "There's a great deal of feeling still about the regulation. The Browns didn't adjoin the regulation. They'd no need to, as their cousin was sheriff and half the courthouse ring are Browns or married to Browns," unquote. In other words, corruption. So there was no need for the Browns to join the regulation to try and, you know, stand up for themselves and stand up for the rights of others, because they had it made, right? They had it made. As a matter of fact, what do? They joined Jamie and fought against the regulation, right? The regulators. We understand why Jamie did that. He was between a rock and a hard place, and he was kind of, he had to, right? Given Governor Tryon and his land. But that was why Jamie did. Not because Jamie was all and necessarily 100% anti-regulator. So anyway, the point is there's still a lot of bad feelings or a lot of feeling about the regulation. And there are still regulators around, or at least people who would be of the same mindset. And several had become more vocal in their criticism of the Browns' influence. So this included, I'm going to say Teague, one of those four ways. This included Mr. O'Brien, the guy whose house, he was one of the ones who had, he was the dude who had been hanged, right? With his wife?
Yes.
So Hodgepile enters the picture here. After having pretended to die at the fire in Cross Creek, remember when that whole warehouse went up in flames? To connect it to our minds, the fire happened when Brianna was 8.5 months pregnant, right? She goes accompanied by Lord John to see Stephen Bonnet, who is imprisoned there, and he is meant to be hanged. She thinks to go there to forgive him for her own sake, right? For her own sake, and maybe for the child's, is something that she wants to do. It's important for her, not so much for him, although he could take from it what he wanted. So it is at that time where the warehouse, which is where they kept the prisoners at that moment, was on fire. It was set on fire on purpose to allow by Bonnet's people, if I'm not mistaken, to allow him to escape. And he rescues, I hate to put it that way, he takes Brianna with him, and she's like, "You're not going to get it. I'm not going with you unless you go get him." So he also rescues Lord John, who had been knocked over the head and passed out. So they all get out of it. And Arvin Hodgepile was the guy, I think, who, not the secretary, but he was the clerk. So he was sitting at the desk when Brianna arrived. He would have been the one to probably lead her down the stairs. Who knows? Anyway, Hodgepile, he used that opportunity to fake his death, which is actually not stupid. That's the thing, is he may not be
Yeah, but what crazed me is that he faked his death and decided to be reborn as an a-hole.
He was always an a-hole. Come on.
I know, but he's like, now that I've died and I'm a new person, I get to start from scratch. And what did I like the best about my last life? Killing people. So what am I going to do? Kill people full time. Take all their shit.
Kill people full time. So yes. So not staged his death, but used the opportunity, or not planned to stage his death, but used the opportunity to pretend to be dead to start over or whatever. How did he make a living? How did he survive? Well, in several, many illegal ways. He ended up with a small gang of, quote, like-minded thugs. They'd started by robbing anyone that they came across. So that was the first thing. And then they went to holding up taverns. Now, once they were becoming more well-known, or more infamous, of course, they needed to not be around so much because there's more danger for them to be captured. So they moved into the backcountry.
But here's a question, though.
Yeah.
Who keeps their name? Who keeps the name Hodgepile? Like, you've just been reborn to be like this. Then you could do and be anything, and you've chosen to go by Hodgepile.
So basically, now this episode is going to be Hodgepile 2.0. I mean, you're right.
If you must.
If anyone, not only you had a chance to like do a 2.0 because you get this chance, even if you do all the nasty stuff that he does, good gracious, like, why would you keep that name? Number one, it's gross. Number two, and he probably didn't care about that part, but number two, it connects you to your past. Why even? We know he had some sense of self-preservation because when they were becoming more well-known, Ginger, they moved to the backcountry. If you're not afraid, now granted, that was maybe not because of his name, that was because of what they did and maybe what they looked like, right? But he knew. He wasn't stupid. He knew there was danger of being recognized. Well, his name eventually could have been recognized too. So it's funny that he allows for their acts and their faces, maybe what, right, the way they look to be potential danger, and so they move on. But he never thinks, so I guess he's not that smart. He never thinks to choose a new name. That's ridiculous. I agree with you. That's ridiculous. So they moved to the backcountry once it was becoming a little bit too touchy, too close for comfort for them. They found isolated settlements and homesteads. Quote, they had also begun killing their victims to avoid the nuisance of identification and pursuit. Unquote. So that's how they ended up getting, and he and his gang ended up getting to the backcountry. Then they thought, again, always about making money and making easy money, or easy, you know, as much money as possible. Then they thought they could make more money by selling the girls and boys into servitude, whether it was to the Native Americans or to pirates, right? Or anywhere, or anyone. If they could make money, it was a way for them to do so. But the question comes back to, how did the Browns become involved with this gang?
Blame Claire.
Claire's
fault.
Yeah.
If she'd never saved that baby, if she'd never delivered that baby to the Browns,
that's true.
If they would never have been able to take that baby hostage and use it as a leverage point.
No, that in was that something case, blame worth, the, blame like the that. Twins. Blame the twins. I mean, you can keep going back
blame
and back and
the
back.
Beardsleys.
Yeah, the Beardsleys, yeah.
Look, I blame the Beardsleys for many things.
Yeah, we know.
Not the least
Wait,
of
hold
which.
It, hold it. So,
you know,
yes,
it's coming.
We know. So the Browns had taken over. Remember the Beardsleys, Aaron Beardsley, who had a stroke or two and was lying in his own filth, and his wife.
I believe they called it apoplexy.
Yes. And his wife, Fanny, had like tried to burn his foot, or not tried. She had burned his foot. Like, basically,
she was torturing him.
Absolutely torturing him. And I think we found out, if I'm not mistaken,
he deserved it,
been in that condition for like a month, which is like, oh gosh, it's just, it's gross, but it's just wrong. Anyway, so she was there with him for like a month in that condition. So remember, Jamie.
And never thought to clean that place up just a little bit.
I mean,
they even talk about how nasty that
stank,
place was.
Yeah.
In this chapter.
Yes.
That they were like, we cleaned it up. It's under new management. The Cherokees benefited. The Browns benefit. Everyone loved the new outpost. But it just made me think of how long he was in a bed.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
Like, unable to do anything. And she spent that whole time torturing him instead of cleaning house. Like, that would have been your opportunity. He can't stop you. Clean it up. This is your future now if you choose it.
That is true. That's the outpost we're talking about. Beardsley's outpost, right? He traded with the natives, with the Cherokee and I think another tribe, but he did a lot of business there. And he was gone for long periods of time, but he also did a lot of business there. So the Browns had taken over that outpost. Because remember, as Summer said, once Claire delivered the baby, the mom ran off. They wanted to get the baby to, like, okay, forget the baby. They were already on their way to Brownsville, right? To get men for the regulation. Remember, that was actually their purpose. They did a detour to this place because they learned from the Beardsleys, the twins, they learned about them, and like something was off, right? They were trying to get...
They were getting the indentured paperwork to get the twins away from the Beardsleys. They went to do that.
While they were there, they see that she's just gone down or come out, literally, and Jamie ends up killing Aaron Beardsley, putting him out of his misery. There was no way. He was not going to survive that. He wasn't going to. He couldn't walk again, nothing like that. And the baby mama ran off overnight. So they were left with the baby, but they still had to make their way to Brownsville.
We don't talk about this because we generally don't go back after, you know, the series have aired and talk about, I wish they'd blah, blah, blah. I wish I hadn't had to watch Fanny Beardsley give birth. I thought it was much more powerful to her just like drop a kid in the middle of the woods and run off in the middle of the night and have them wake up being like, what the fuck? That was such an interesting choice from the book.
We're not going to talk about this, you know, like guess about the future, but here we are. They're getting ready. They haven't started filming season 6 to our knowledge yet. I'm not even going to comment on that because it's things with the pandemic and all this stuff. Like, who knows when we're going to... I honestly, as I said, I don't foresee getting a season 6 once they do it anytime before 2022. That's just my opinion. Anyway.
You said doo-doo.
Yeah. 2022, not doo-doo. Oh, I did say doo-doo. You're right. Anyway, so
you did say doo-doo.
So regardless of the time, we don't have... There's no greenlit chapter. There's no greenlit. My goodness, this day. There's no greenlit season 7 or 8, right? Even though we know book 9 is coming out, who knows when, but she's almost done. And she has said there will be 10 books. So 7 and 8 are not greenlit. So that's a whole conversation in itself. You know, will they do? Will they not? If they don't, let's say they don't. If they don't, what was the purpose other than Hollywood, whatever, for keeping in the Beardsley? Well, I mean, you got to do the Beardsleys because you need the twins and all that. Okay, fair enough. And Aaron, and it's drama. Okay, it's good TV.
The Beardsleys and Browns, and I mean, they had to do the thing to set us up for this, for what's just passed in season 5 and what's about to happen in season 6. They had to set us up for that.
But I'm just thinking about that girl. There has to be a reason besides this outpost.
There's no reason in the books yet, so we'll have to wait and see.
Absolutely. But that's what I'm trying to... Absolutely. But if they were planning something, Diana may not divulge everything to them, but she would absolutely tell them, yeah, that is not something you can get rid of. You know what I mean? Anyway, I don't want to read too much into anything, but all I'm saying is it's interesting that the show, maybe not interesting, the show chose to keep the Beardsleys and the baby and all that, right? And that the baby...
There is a red phone in somebody's office that goes directly to Diana Gabaldone. So I'm positive that they've had long, drawn out conversations at the drop of a hat where they just pick up the phone. They pick up the red phone and they're like, Diana Gabaldone, it's the showrunner. I've called. Can we get rid of this baby? And she says, no.
Hold on, though. So we're talking about the books, right? So for the books, we obviously needed it to get here. In the show, since they brought it forward, they killed Marsali killed Lionel, right? They ended up taking his body back to Brownsville, correct?
Yes.
And she, unlike in the book, which is fine,
well,
doesn't matter.
Jamie did.
Okay, that's right. Jamie did, and she didn't go with him. Okay, that was another thing. Anyway, so Jamie, they take his body back to Brownsville, and they say what happened, and they very nicely set us up for the big baddie for season 6. Great. Okay, scene. All of that happened without...
What? What did you just say? For the big daddy versus what?
For the big baddie.
Oh, okay. Because I heard big daddy, and I'm like, I don't recall
this
that
is not...
scene. Who's... Wait. Who's the big daddy? Who's the big daddy?
This is not
Ginger?
The Golden Girls. So
who's your big daddy?
Setting up the big baddie for season 6. So talking about the show briefly, why have the baby?
I mean, too late, but yeah.
Well, not okay. Not why have the baby. Let me get a little bit forward. So in the show, they completely did away with, or at least we don't know yet in the show. We don't know how Lionel ended up with Hodgepile. Did we know? Okay, it would be interesting to know if someone went back, if the same character, the actor who played Hodgepile in season 5 was also in season 4 at the actual burning of the warehouse. I'm curious if they kept that So that's a question for us to maybe look up one day. That's one. Not so important.
To be fair, we don't have anybody to torture for information anymore.
Oh, I understand that, but I'm not talking, that doesn't matter. What I'm saying is this conversation that we just started, or the description of how the Browns became involved with Hodgepyle's gang, is completely, and the tie-in of that outpost is completely left out. It doesn't mean it won't come back, right? But the fact that you have Lionel Brown in the show, what the show did do, the show did have Lionel with Hodgepyle, right? They did bring those two together. And maybe they're going to explain it later. Who knows? But they didn't explain anything, right? And maybe that's something that they'll get into later, because actually, even though Hodgepyle's gone, it actually shows of the corruption of the Browns. And further, this, at least right here, I know because he's dead, so this exactly won't happen or didn't happen and won't happen in season six. But we don't know where season six will open. Will it open on her, like, you know, 2 weeks later? Or will it open on, you know, a year later? We really truly don't know, because that show and time is like not even a joke. It is a joke, actually. Anyway, so that's why it's so, I don't know, whatever. Let's leave the show away now. So show gone. Back here. So the Browns had taken over that outpost by Aaron Beardsley after they'd adopted his child named Alicia Brown. It was cleaned. No, Alicia was the one who married that other dude who ran off. I forget her name, but she was the little girl. She was about 2 years old by the time this thing, not this chapter, happens, but about 2 years old when this incident I'm about to mention happens. So they had cleaned it out, as Summer said. They had restocked it. It was pristine, or as pristine as it could be. And Hodgepyle had come upon, with his band, had come upon the trading post. And he saw trading happened, and he walked in, shot the couple in charge, and began to loot. Now, what? Not the two-year-old, but one of the daughters, I think it was the daughter of the couple he killed, was young, but not that young. And she'd been able to escape and ridden a mule, I think, to Brownsville for help. And on the way, she ran into the Committee of Safety. Again, still, quote-unquote, mostly on the up and up, right there to do legit job. So she ran to get help, runs into the Committee of Safety, and brings them back. And this leads to a standoff. Hodgepyle had Alicia Brown captive. So this two-year-old and the Browns, Committee of Safety, were surrounding the place. So it was a standoff. And Hodgepyle had like enough food and stuff in there to live for weeks, if not a month or more. So after some time, Richard Brown goes to chat with Hodgepyle. It's like he raises a white flag. He goes to chat with Hodgepyle and they reach some kind of peace. What's the result? Quote, Hodgepyle's gang would continue their operations, steering clear of any settlement under the Browns' protection, but would bring the proceeds of their robberies to the trading post, where they could be disposed of at a good profit, with Hodgepyle's gang taking a generous cut. Unquote. This is what, not this right here, but what happened to Claire, right? That the fallout or the result of this compromise is what happens when you negotiate with terrorists, period. Right?
Well, yeah, I mean,
literally.
When you let people know you're over a barrel, you're never not over a barrel, right? So it's like once you've shown your weakness to the terrorists, which are the, you know, the Browns, not the Browns, excuse me, the Hodgepyle gang, whatever we're going to call them.
We're the Hodgepyle gang. Yeah. That just came in my
That's terrible.
I know.
You just ruined my childhood.
I didn't know you were going to say that. Oh, Lord. When you're in trouble, we're
I
the
love
double.
The Bloodhound Gang. We're I love the Bloodhound Gang.
Okay, hold on a second.
Not Hodgepyle Gang.
Oh, hello.
It's Bloodhound Gang. I promise you it's the Bloodhound Gang.
No, I know it is, Summer.
It was. They showed it at the same time as 3-2-1 Contact.
The Bloodhound Gang was a series about a group of young detectives who used science to solve crimes. So...
yeah, that's not the same.
I know, Summer.
You have defiled the memory of the Bloodhound Gang with your Hodgepyle nonsense.
Hold on.
There was no science involved in Hodgepyle's machinations.
Okay, so I don't find anywhere where it has a list of the lyrics, but it's definitely on YouTube. We're there on the double. We're the Bloodhound Gang.
I'm familiar. I know the whole song.
Yeah, if you've got the crime, we've got the time. We're the Bloodhound Gang. Okay, so I knew what the song was. I didn't have all of the stuff memorized, but I did it on purpose. I didn't do it on. I didn't mean to ruin your childhood, but I certainly chose
totally
that.
Did it
I
on
chose
purpose.
That tune on purpose. You thought that was on
hate
accident?
It.
Come on,
I hate it.
No, I know it wasn't on accident. That's why I said I feel like it was on purpose.
Oh,
your
summer.
Ruination of a childhood.
No.
A childhood good thing has now been tarnished. Get ready, Ginger. Ruin 3-2-1 contact for me, too. How are you going to ruin that?
3-2-1 contact is the secret, is the moment when everything happens. Contact yeah. is the reason.
I'm waiting for you to reword this.
Oh,
in an awful way.
I don't have that.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Throw some hodgepile in there. How about some Lionel Brown?
It takes a little more time, Summer.
How about some Tebby? How about a little bit of
no,
how about a
Tebby,
little bit of rape?
Unfortunately,
can you throw some rape in there?
Summer. Unfortunately, you're right. Tebby is a little bit.
Contact is required when we're raping. Was this what we're doing?
You are awful.
Moving on.
Yes. Yeah, so you don't negotiate with terrorists, although it's hard to say why. I understood, and I have to give them props. Well, not props for the outcome, but props for not wanting to lose that 2-year-old girl. So I do feel for the Browns slightly there. They were absolutely, you're right, they're absolutely over a barrel. So they make that agreement. And that is part of how Hodgepile's gang is able to survive. They get now they get a cut. Whatever they bring in on their own is they get and then they get a cut of whatever comes into the trading post. And this, of course, included human captives. So she tells them that Lionel had tried to have them kill her and had meant to drown her. Possibly, and her telling them this possibly sealed Lionel's fate. Because, right, remember, up until that point, or at least when she spoke with Jamie last chapter, Jamie was not, he was definitely leaning towards killing him, but he hadn't decided 100% if he was going to kill him or not. But she thinks, too bad, so sad. Meaning, if what she had just said sealed his fate, so be it. Jamie thinks that, I think I'll hang him. But he still has more questions. And he tells Claire, but don't worry, my dear, you will not see him again. And then it was bedtime. They head upstairs. And there's something else There's something Jamie has been keeping to her because Jamie had, I think, just arrived from the latest trip to, no, not just, because they had already been to bed together when he got back from the latest trip to the Snowbird Village. But he hadn't shared with her what had happened with having strange naked women in his bed. And he chooses this time to tell her. I never understood why. Well, I understood why, because he was being really funny about being in bed with her or not, or next to her or on the floor. He was being really funny. Part of it was not wanting her to be in pain and not knowing if she'd be comfortable with a man next to her because of what happened. So that I get. But he also feels a little bit, I guess, bad, or he feels he needs to share this thing. So he tells her about what happened in the Snowbird Village with the two naked ladies who were sent to come to his bed, or what we believe is to his bed. When he tells her, I know we talked with Tara about this. I so hope we get this scene. It is like, it is gold. It is maybe once a book we get something like this, or once a series. It's so good. And after a few minutes, Claire's like, I can't stand. I can't stop. I can't. She was like aching with laughter, like not just because it's funny, but because she's still recovering with all of her wounds, and it literally hurts to laugh because she's so beaten and bruised. Jamie is like a little bit, but he's not laughing.
Well, he doesn't think it's funny at
not
all.
At all. Which makes it even funnier.
This is a problem. Like for him, this is a problem. Like, he is like, every time I go there, they are putting more and more girls in my bed, even though I have requested them to please stop. And this is, you know, it's a constant moral dilemma that I don't. Right. And it's like, the more he protests, the longer and harder she laughs. And she's like at the point now where she's just like, you can't, you have to stop. You have to stop talking about this. We have to move on, because I am hurting too badly from laughing.
Ugh. And then they go to sleep. Sometime in the middle of the night, Jamie wakes up. He had been dreaming of Randall again. And Randall, when it woke him up, or just before he woke up, Randall had said to him, kill me, my heart's desire.
Do you require... Require is... fuck you. Do you require...
Do I require contact? Yes, I do.
No. Do you... Stop it. Do you recall is what I was trying to say, but then you said desire when I was trying to say recall, and it made me say require. Do you recall...
Do I what?
That or actual recall? Conversation happening.
With Jamie?
Of him saying, kill me, or do you think that this is a... Because I don't recall this happening in any of the rape scenes that he had with Randall. So I was wondering if this was perhaps him having a remembrance of Culloden.
I have a hard time...
Because I don't recall.
I have a hard time thinking that Randall would say on the battlefield, kill me, my heart's desire. And also, I don't remember any... I don't have any vision of that or memory of that in any scene we... No, we never... I cannot tell you if he ever called him my heart's desire. I don't know about that. But Randall never said, kill me. If he did, yeah, it probably would have been on Culloden. But I have a hard time thinking that that came from life. But it could have.
Or if kill me is a euphemism for, you know, petite mort. Oh, like the little death.
No, I don't think so.
Like pump one out for me, baby.
Summer, you know what I mean? Gosh. It could have been. I got it. I got the point. I don't need to hear that. Stop it. La, 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 contact is my new song.
Exactly.
And I'm not gonna
we're the
think of someone's
gang.
Long dong schlong contact. So, okay, stop it.
You're making it weird.
I don't think I made it weird. I think you started that.
I'm just problem solving and you're making
so
it
Jamie
weird.
So Jamie wakes up once he hears this. And he checks himself and he's like, okay, I'm awake. I'm safe. My wife is here. He goes back to bed with his curly-headed wife. But he definitely has, like, those words are ringing in his ears.
Yeah. And then he's like, I'm not going to go to bed so quickly. I'm going to get cold in this room so that I don't fall asleep because I definitely don't want to fall right back into that sleep. Have you had that where you go to sleep and you're like, or you wake up and you're like, oh, I just evaded that serial killer. Thank God that dream has ended. And then you fall back asleep and the serial killer is right there. Just like, I've been waiting for you.
I'm the exact opposite. Whenever I do or can't get back to sleep or want to or whatever, it's usually I want to and I can't. It's not usually because I'm afraid and I try to stay up because I'm afraid. No, it's usually I want to and damn it, I can't. I want to get back to some hot dude or I don't know, some trip somewhere. I don't know.
Well, all I know is that the dreams I want to get back to, I never can. And the dreams I don't want to get back to are waiting for me, primed and queued up on the recorder. So like the second I fall back into sleep, they're like, and go. And that was chapter 31. Moving on to a very brief chapter, chapter 32, entitled Hanging's Too Good.
The next morning, Mrs. Bug is back. All seems a little straighter, more in focus. Like the world is little by little coming back to rights. And she serves Claire up some breakfast, just like old times. And Claire asks how Mr. Brown is doing to make conversation. And as you would expect from Mrs. Bug, quote, nowhere near so badly off as he ought be, unquote. And then, quote, hanging's too good for him. And then she mentions something about how he's got maggots. And Claire's like, oh. And then she literally runs to the door or the whatever, goes outside and like vomits up her breakfast. And this in turn freaks her out. She's like, there's no way. There's no way this can't be. And of course, what she means is there's no way I can be pregnant.
Hey, it's awfully quick for that.
It is super quick. Super quick.
That's like 2 days.
If that is how I understood it to be those 2 days, second morning after they got back, yeah, it's a bit soon. So then she turns herself, she's like, okay, look, I cannot dwell on this. It's going to freak me out and I'm going to be no good to anyone. So let me look at the things I can do. She goes to get her basket and she goes off. She's like, I'm going to go to the Christie's. I'm going to check on Tom's hand. I'm going to invite Malva to come out with me and search for herbs and cut them and all this stuff. And she means to teach Malva how to prepare the penicillin colonies. So she had something very practical and ultimately necessary that she had to do to distract herself from Brown and what Jamie was going to do with him.
And as I said, this was brief. That
so brief.
Was chapter 32.
I'm like, wait, is something else happened? Nope.
Nope. Join us next time when we will continue our Breath of Snow and Ashes read along with chapter 33 entitled, In Which Mrs. Bug Takes a Hand.
And I don't know yet if that's literally or if she actually takes somebody's hand off, because it's been that long since I've read it. So I'm as excited as you. And of course, if you'd like to continue the conversation, join us online at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
And again, a special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Elizabeth S. To find out more about what a co-producer is and how you might become one, visit patreon.com/outlanderpod.
And as always, if you'd like to find out more about how to get a shirt with some of our artwork on it, or a mask, or really anything. Who knows how much longer we're going to need masks. And until we don't need masks again, we'd like to sell you one. Go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.